Welcome to Dear Watchers, a Marvel What If podcast, where we do a deep dive into the long-running Marvel comic book series, What If.
We're traveling through the storylines before and after that inspired or took inspiration from the week's issue. And your Uatus on this journey are me, Guido.
And me, Hydra agent turned S.H.I.E.L.D. agent turned Avenger turned Skrull turned S.H.I.E.L.D. agent turned Hydra agent turned Avenger again, I think, Rob.
Whoa, I think you got that in the right order, even I was trying to follow it this time. Whoa. So welcome back to our special series for our October Villains Fun series. We have this three-parter on What If issue 17, because it has three distinct stories. So this is part two. You can listen to part one in the previous episode and stay tuned for part three. But this is the second part focused on this story of villainy.
So dear watchers, whether you are human, woman, or a normal looking woman that might actually be a spider, please join us as we dive into the multiverse with today's episode. And today we are going to be discussing, as Guido said, what if Spider-Woman had remained a villain?
This is Earth 79101, a slightly different numerical variation from our previous Earth in this issue. And a brief summary of what happened on this Earth, altering the Spider-Woman origin we know during her confrontation with Nick Fury, who has kidnapped her boyfriend, the Hydra agent Jared. Jared actually dies on this Earth, so she never finds out that he was faking his affection. She never gets the footage from Nick Fury that Hydra has been manipulating her. Contessa comes in, startles her. She kills Nick accidentally. This apparently is a thing for her, killing people when she's startled. Spider-Woman stops Contessa from kidnapping Count Vermis so that she can still learn her origin, and Contessa captures her, puts her on trial, where Vermis returns to testify that because she is a spider and not a human, she can't be on trial. So Jessica runs away, travels around the globe, gets criminals to give her information on her past, then kills them, thinking that they will turn her into S.H.I.E.L.D. or that they are S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And she quite literally flies off into the moonlight at the end of what we know on Earth 79101.
So dead boyfriends, you're actually a spider. There's a lot going on with Ms. Drew here. But why don't we talk a little bit about our backgrounds with Spider-Woman? Because mine is pretty much zero. So what about you?
like actually zero? I mean, you know she exists. Well, I knew so what did you know about her?
I always thought her costume looked really cool. The red and the yellow. In part also because Spider-Man's costume I always found a little weird in the fact that he's red and blue, which is no spider in real life is red and blue. And I don't know if a spider is red and yellow, but there's something about her. But there's still something about her look, and it's got those geometric shapes that it has a very Black Widow, the spider, and maybe also the character, but especially the spider, they have those kind of shapes. So I always loved her look. I knew she had the venom blasts, and so I knew that she had some of the same powers as Spider-Man, the super strength, the clinging to walls, but she had these other things. And I knew that she had a very complicated, twisted history in terms of various, you know, affiliations that she had, but that's about it.
So my background is a little deeper. I never read her whole run, but there were some issues of her solo title, which lasted somewhat long, that I would collect because Chris Claremont wrote her, Anne Nesenti wrote her, Mark Gruenwald wrote her, Marv Wolfman created the series. So she had some pretty awesome writers writing her. I think the issue was there was not a consistent writer, though. She disappeared for a while and, of course, stops being Spider-Woman for a while. And then because a large part of her return is Bendis's work on Secret Invasion, which we'll talk more about today, I read all of that. Spider-Woman origin comes out. she's in the new Avengers, or is she? And since then, I've read her solo titles and enjoyed her. So I know her pretty well. I her origin is convoluted, and I am definitely not an expert, but she's a character I've known pretty well.
And that's what we were talking about before we started the podcast, or started recording, I should say, is I was a child of the 90s, so I knew a different Spider-Woman. She had that blue Venom-esque outfit with the light brown hair. So that was always the Spider-Man I knew from reading Spider-Man comics and from trading cards and things like that.
Yes, Julia Carpenter. Yes.
They both have great names. Jessica Drew, Julia Carpenter.
They do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these origin issues.
Why right now on this very show, you're going to get the answer to all your questions. Our amazing story begins a few years ago.
And our first issue for today is going to be Marvel Spotlight number 32. That is from February 1977 with the very probably overly dramatic title, Dark Destiny.
And this was written by Archie Goodwin, penciled by Sal Buscema, inked by Jim Mooney, colored by Janice Cohen, lettered by Irving Watanabe, and edited by writer Archie Goodwin. We read it because it is the first appearance of Spider-Woman, Agent Arachne.
And just everyone else is probably like going to yell at their podcast provider. But these Marvel spotlights, these were used to basically introduce or maybe like do a back, a way of piloting a character without giving them their own series. Is that correct?
Correct. And lore has it for her that it was so popular that they very quickly rushed a solo title, which was unusual. But yes, Marvel Spotlight was used to debut characters or would feature characters who were only moderately popular. And this is toward the end of the run of Marvel Spotlight. And her debut again did quite well apparently, and so it led to her solo title. But what do you think of the issue debuting Agent Arachne?
I think being that we're just 10 plus years away from the founding of the quintessential Marvel characters, she's totally fit into that Marvel character realm of this person who's very conflicted about her powers. She doesn't quite know where she comes from. All those kind of classic tropes that I think we've seen. It almost felt like they took a little bit of all the other pre-existing characters and kind of put together to come up with Jessica Drew.
Yeah, I think there are definitely elements that are being recycled here. And it's 77, so it's not that close to the early 60s. This is Bronze Age, and I think she uses a lot of the Bronze Age tropes and fuses them together, though, a bit. I think the animal mutation element, while abandoned and somewhat ridiculous, I think at the very least it gives us her Venom Blast, right? So it gives her a power set that is a little different. They don't just do, and they're clearly very conscious of the fact that they're not just doing a female Spider-Man here.
Yes.
And so that's good. I think the Dark Destiny part of it, the shrouded history, the mysterious past, I think all of that is a good blend of elements. Again, none of them groundbreaking, but it's just interesting to debut this character. Some of it, I'm sure, was they probably didn't know what they were doing with this character. So you can tell that the later iterations are all retcons being imposed upon her, but she lends herself to retcons because she's introduced with no memory of her past. So,
well, the whole time I was reading this, I was just thinking, oh, I bet a lot of this does not stay for later. And I was actually surprised that when we read some of our later issues that they still kept fairly close to this origin story. I'm sure there's stuff that has changed over time, but I was thinking, oh, stuff like her being experimented on by the High Evolutionary, this all seems like stuff they're going to disregard. And I was surprised to see that this was something that they kept 30 years later into the future.
Yeah, her strange, convoluted origin, even with Bendis's series of her origin, it stays pretty consistent. Some things get added to it, but it doesn't really get contradicted or transformed too deeply, which is interesting for her. And it's a fun issue. I mean, so in this issue, obviously, this being the core issue that's ultimately going to be sent up in the What If, you know, her transformation from villain to hero is stereotypical.
Coincidences and happenstance that has to occur in order for realizations to come about.
Yeah, well, it's you know, there's lots of absurdity. So I mentioned that she in the What If accidentally kills Nick Fury, because in her origin, what traumatized her was that she accidentally killed someone who snuck up on her and her boyfriend to play a joke in a park. I mean, it's very, very odd stuff that's here. And it's part of how they explain her not having a memory, is that these are very traumatic things. But, you know, it's fun. It doesn't make total sense. Like, why does she live in a world? Like, why she's not being sheltered from the world? Why doesn't she realize Hydra's evil? I get that they manipulated her. You know, when Vermis meets her, he says, like, well, we're just a bunch of misunderstood people and we've been wrongly persecuted. But, like, then how does she never find out another narrative to that? Like, how does she think that's the truth? I understand that the internet didn't exist, but surely the mass media did. So it's a little strange. And I, you know, the fact that it's predicated also on her relationship with Jared is.
Well, I was thinking too, like, you've got one Hydra guy that's named Vermis, the most evil kind of sounding name possible. And then you've got the other named Hydra guy is Jared, which.
I know, maybe in 1977, Jared was an evil, uncommon name. I don't know. And it has since become more well known because it is. Doesn't fit with Count Otto Vermis and Jared.
No.
It's almost like the you know, the AIM agent Bobs and, you know, all the
different
stuff. Yes,
it reminded me very much of that. It almost felt like they were making a joke that you would then see years later now on MODOK or something like that. Only I don't think they were.
No, I don't think so either. Maybe they were, who knows? But so it's, you know, it's fun. It's interesting that this sold so well that they decided to bring her back. I'm curious what, you know, obviously there were few female heroes, and obviously the popularity of Spider-Man probably led some people to it. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say before we move on is both Spider-Woman and Spider-Man, while their origins are tied to spiders, their powers are not very spider-like when you come down to it. And they, at least they give her the venom blast, but neither of them can actually create webs, which is kind of the most iconic spider-like thing that happens. They're both just kind of strong people.
Well, I love it. And one, I don't remember which issue it is, where she has the spider strong fingers and she like puts them into Count Vermis's plane to stop him from taking off. So I read that and was like, wait, do spiders have really strong fingers? I'm not so sure.
I don't think they
actually
have fingers.
Well, if we assume their legs are their fingers, like, are they super strong? I mean, I've never seen a spider punch through the wall. So
that's true. Well, you're hanging out with the wrong spiders.
So let's follow who,
yes,
no longer Agent Arachne, but
no.
Spider-Woman fully into her next issue.
Yes. And that is, of course, Spider-Woman number one from April 1978. So just a little jump into the future. And that issue is entitled A Future Uncertain.
This is written by Marv Wolfman, penciled by Carmen Infantino, inked by Tony DeZuniga, colored by Glynis Wine, lettered by Joe Rosen, edited by Marv Wolfman and Archie Goodwin. We read it because it is the first spectacular issue of Spider-Woman, now in her own book, the superheroine sensation they said couldn't be done. And it gives us her origin. And really importantly, it cuts the cowl off her head.
Well, I was shocked that the hair was actually a plot point. I was very surprised that, because I knew that, you know, I knew that she has the black hair, and I thought, oh, that's just something they changed later on. And I was pretty surprised when she actually dyes her hair so that the policeman Jerry, another Jay that she's in love with, or who's in love with her. I guess Jared wasn't actually in love with her, but yeah, that she's that she's dyeing her hair to hide from him. And then for some strange reason, she also decides to change the costume. She's like, I need to dye my hair so no one can see me, but I also then need to change the cowl. It's like, well, you don't really need to change that. I also want
my beautiful, gorgeous black hair, thick hair now.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, on Batwoman where it's an actual, you know, help, it helps disguise her because it's a different color. It's a wig of hair. Yes. It's a wig of hair. This is her real hair, but.
Yeah, and I am curious. I don't know if they decided the black hair was going to like add to the character of Spider-Woman, or if they were trying, you know, Ms. Marvel's out at this point, if they were trying to distinguish Jessica from Carol and not have as many blonde, or I guess Jessica here is a little bit more redheaded.
Mousy brunette.
But is that how she's described in the text, or is that your own unacceptable language?
No. Why I'm saying that is because throughout this entire issue, everyone's like, she is so strange and like she is like so weird.
That's because she's like a spider.
I know, but there's what's so weird is like when she looks like a gorgeous woman, she looks just like a perfectly normal 20-something-year-old woman, but constantly there's an old woman who's talking to the landlord who's like, we should throw her out, she should be out in the gutter, she should be nowhere near here. And then she's applying for all these jobs, and one of the people says, you'll scare away all of our customers. So I don't quite know where all of that is coming from in this issue.
Well, I think we're supposed to get that it's people can sort of sense that there's something off about her, and it's her powers. And at this point, this is the point where they decided not to have her be a spider. She actually was intended to be a spider that mutated into a human. So yeah, I think it leaves us with, you know, she's a little off because she has spider genetic modification is a way of moving us beyond she's an actual just spider, which yes. I can't even believe.
No, this does make a lot more sense in that, yes, and that it was something that to save her. Yes, I do see how this works. It was interesting too, a few episodes back we talked about the first issues of Shang-Chi, and while there were characters in Shang-Chi that came from British novels by Sax Rohmer, a lot of it is set in London. And this issue is also set in London, also kind of involves Scotland Yard. I was wondering, do you think there was something going on in the ether at the time that they wanted to set these stories in London instead of New York? Maybe they just felt they had so many characters in New York and the United States, they wanted to set them elsewhere, because it was giving me a very similar vibe, and they were coming out around the same time.
Yeah, and at the end of the What If, she's actually headed back to London. So I don't know why they did that. You know, Marvel UK is happening at this time, so maybe there was an idea that some of these titles could end up being reprinted in the Marvel UK imprints. Obviously, when you have work done by people like Chris Claremont, he was from the UK. But Marv Wolfman was not. He's American, as far as I know. And so I don't know if it was just to vary the locales or if there was a marketing thought to it with Marvel UK. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. And you also did have the Sex Pistols and Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood and all those people coming on the scene. So maybe London was just a hot place at that time. So they thought, let's set it there. New York is in decline. Maybe London's on the rise. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, very interesting that they're both set in this location. Well, let us move on to today's What If.
I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
And as Guido mentioned, this is part two of a three-part What If? And this is What If Volume 1, Issue Number 17. And the title of this story is What If Spider-Man?
Nope.
And the title of this story is What If Spider-Woman Had Remained a Villain?
So this is written by Stephen Grant, penciled by Carmen Infantino, inked by Mike Esposito, colored by Carl Gafford, lettered by Tom Orzechowski, and edited by Mark Gruenwald. That is the team who did the whole issue, which, as we talked about in the last episode and will continue in the next episode, has one framing by Uatu, but is three distinct stories with start and ends. They do not tie in together. The cover question is, what if Spider-Woman was a villain? Versus the actual question, which is, what if she had remained a villain? So Stephen Grant, who scripted this, we talked a little bit about this last week, but in terms of Spider-Woman, he recalled that Mark Gruenwald was either writing or was going to be writing Spider-Woman, and he knew that and wanted to get her more attention. And that's true. Gruenwald does move over to Spider-Woman. So he wanted to use her in What If, but knew that she was too minor a character. So they decided they needed to anchor the book, and Mark came up with the umbrella concept of this.
Mm. And would Ghost Rider have been the most popular of those characters at the time?
No, he was similarly introduced in a separate title in Marvel Premiere and then got into his own solo series. So I don't know that he would have actually been more popular than Spider-Woman. I think they were, Captain Marvel actually probably had the longest established solo series at this point, but I don't think any of the three of them were A-listers. So I think it was a good combination, and Spider-Woman, yeah, needed the popularity as Stephen Grant shared.
Well, and a lot of this issue does feel like it's a direct continuation of her very first appearance, and of course it's taking a different direction with the story, but everything from the art to the way that people speak, it really does feel like it was almost a different take from her original debut issue for me.
Yeah, well, it's definitely one of those what ifs that's meant to be a single issue turnaround. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at one issue and trying to modify that one issue and stay within the confines. Obviously, it's also a third of a book, so it's a short, breezy issue, I'd say. But it is definitely meant to just be Marvel Spotlight 32. What if Marvel Spotlight 32 went differently and kept her a villain? And it now has an interesting way of getting there. I mean, Contessa's not in Marvel Spotlight 32. Mm-hmm. So having her show up here, it's an interesting way of altering it. Having Jared die is an interesting shift too. And obviously the Nick dying seems unnecessary and kind of silly, but I guess it has to happen because Nick was the one who could have revealed that Hydra was manipulating her. Yes. Plus it sends her more into villainy.
It also felt like to me that they then wanted this a woman versus a woman storyline with Contessa then going after Jessica Drew. I kind of got that sense from it as well.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not sure.
And Jared does die in the original as well, but just at a different time.
Well, he dies just because something explodes or something. He doesn't die in that scene because he has to say to her, I hated you touching me.
But it's still the venom blast. It's just a very slow death that he thinks, where he gets to just say, yes, I hated that you even had to touch me. A very cruel ending for her.
It was. So,
and here we get a lot of, you know, courtroom sequences. Of course, what did you think of the big twist? I don't know if you could quite call it a twist, but the big reveal at the end where she can't be prosecuted because she's not a human. She is, in fact, a spider.
Well, what's kind of fun about it, I can't tell, and I'm not enough of an expert, and I didn't do enough deep research on this brief story to know. So this is after Spider-Woman number one. This is 1979. Mm-hmm. Spider-Woman one is 78. She debuts in 77. So we're in a 3-year span here. And they had moved away from her being a spider. So I don't know if Stephen Grant is actually sort of more playing with the idea that Vermis thinks she's a spider, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have confirmation in this that she is a spider and the court system says, oh yes, no, she's a spider. Let's move on. We just have that moment in the courtroom where he says, well, she can't be tried. She's a spider. And then she actually ends up in Paris in a trench coat. So I sort of assume she's on the lam. So
yes. She's trying to get
a fun reveal.
Yeah.
It is a fun sort of way of bringing him and that absurd plot line back. But yeah, it's not clear if it's intended to be confirmation that Spider-Woman is a spider.
I think on that note too, it's not really ever confirmed why he comes forward and says this. I guess we're made to believe he might have struck some kind of deal with the prosecutors, because what does he have to gain from getting her off?
Yeah, I'm unsure.
I was also thinking, what did you think? Do you think this issue actually stayed true to the question that it poses? Because there's many times throughout this issue that she's actually not villainous. And do you think that this issue actually does the question, the what if question, justice? Because many times throughout this issue, she's not really being a villain. And you actually mentioned even in your introduction that often she is killing people accidentally. So do you think that this is a good what if question?
I do think it's a bit of a cheat. I agree that she's not totally a villain. It's strange because when she kills Andre, her informant, at the end, she says, like, I may have to hire you criminals, but don't think for a moment that I trust any of you. But then she goes on to say that now that S.H.I.E.L.D. knows where she is, and when he doesn't report in, S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be coming after her. So she's staying on the run from S.H.I.E.L.D. And again, part of me has to believe that she now knows S.H.I.E.L.D. is the better organization in terms of the world's well-being, at least relative to Hydra. So at this point, what's keeping her a villain, it's not clear why she's staying a villain, other than I guess that she's a fugitive and she does kill people inadvertently a lot. She also just seems to be anti-S.H.I.E.L.D. In this telling of her story. So it's strange that they keep her a villain. I think it is a little bit of a cheat, but she does stay a villain. It just doesn't make sense, right? It's not that she's a misunderstood character who's like out in exile or something. It's like, no, she hates S.H.I.E.L.D. and she does seem to kill people, but it doesn't make sense why.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of accidental killing, as we mentioned, and it definitely reminds me a lot of the Shang-Chi what if issue as well, where that question is, what if he had remained loyal to Fu Manchu? And he does that for about half that issue, then turns against Fu Manchu, and then basically ends up as a lone agent. And it's very similar here as well, where she's not loyal to Hydra, she's not loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D., she's kind of out on her own. I think the Shang-Chi issue does that question much better. And it's much clearer here. She kind of is constantly just flailing about and not really sure. And part of it is also because of her memory. But so I think it's a fun issue.
Well, that the Shang-Chi issue too is the issue before this in sequence.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So there is, it's not the same writer, but I think you're right. It is a similar idea that she's sort of isn't totally villainous, but is exiled from both good and bad in the end. Yeah, it's strange. They also, obviously, they took for this issue, as we talked about with Ghost Rider and we'll talk about with Captain Marvel. They took three characters who start in questionable or villainous ways and play with the idea, well, what if they don't go down the better path right away? And with Spider-Woman, the only reason she's sort of staying villainous is because she's just dead set on finding out her past. So, So we have never revisited this Earth before. And before we get to our future issues, do you want to go back to Earth 79101?
Not really. I think also just because, similar to what we were just saying, it really doesn't end up in a vastly different place than we do in Earth 616. Because in Spider-Woman's first standalone issue, she's on her own in London. There's someone, a cop, chasing her. She's kind of running from him, but she's not really sure if she wants to be running from him. So we're very much in a similar place here, only that is much more well-defined than this is, in part because this is such a short story.
Yeah, I'd say the only difference is that she actually killed Nick Fury, right? So this Earth 79101 would have to deal with those repercussions. I guess it dealt with it in a court case that she got off of here, but yeah, I definitely don't need to go back. So let's go forward.
No. Yeah. So let us talk about our then that issues.
Issue. There's just one.
Will the future you describe be averted, averted, averted?
Yes, just one issue today. So, Guido, how did you come up with this abbreviated list, and why are we just talking about one issue?
I possibly could have probed for more, but being a shorter what if, I decided to try to keep it to a trimmed list here. And with Spider-Woman, I looked, so obviously I knew the whole Secret Invasion plot line. And I knew and read the whole Secret Invasion plot, knowing that it's what puts her back into Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. double agent stuff, though it doesn't end up being her, of course, right? So there are many layers to that, as you described in your opening. So I just wanted to focus on that because there aren't really any other major stories with her that I'm aware of where she becomes a villain, where she accidentally kills someone. Nothing quite like that occurs with her. So I figured this was a story to go to because it feels like it pulls in some of that early origin stuff and what if stuff. So we chose one specific issue.
Yeah, well, for me, this was my first ever reading of this. So we discussed New Avengers number 42, and that is from August 2008. And it is, as we mentioned, Secret Invasion Empire Part 3.
So this is written by Brian Michael Bendis, penciled by Jim Cheung, inked by John Dell, colored by Justin Ponser, lettered by Richard Starkings and Albert Deschene, and edited by Tom Brevoort. So this is part of the big Secret Invasion plotline. This is the tie-in in the New Avengers title, Empire Part 3. We're now moving through the heroes who've been revealed to be Skrulls and getting the backstory on how this happened. So we read this one because it has her interactions with Nick Fury that actually lead to her choosing to become an agent again, which is where she gets replaced with the Skrull. And then we still get some of the fun double agent stuff while she's a Skrull, in terms of her working for Hydra, working for S.H.I.E.L.D., then becoming an Avenger, and all those layers. So that's why we read this one.
Yeah, and as I just said, it was my first time reading any of the Secret Invasion storylines. So, of course, I was a little lost from time to time as to, okay, wait,
doesn't
okay,
that's stand not on Hank its own Pym. Totally well.
No, no. I mean, but what I think does stand on its own, and I'd be interested to hear your take on this, is now that I've been reading more Brian Michael Bendis, and of course, we read him with Jessica Jones, which I know is his biggest creation. But I can see so much of the MCU style in his writing. And it really does feel like he, maybe more than other writers, but I mean, you can disagree because you know more than me, but he really seems like his tone was borrowed so much by the MCU. That kind of sarcasm, a little bit of sexiness, but also these kind of grand storytelling, very verbal as well. So yeah, I definitely could see that Hickman here.
For sure. I mean, Hickman later. So Bendis first. I mean, Bendis is doing this. This is also the payoff. The other thing he does is a very MCU thing. This is 3 years after Spider-Woman is introduced as an Avenger.
Oh, okay.
And she's been fake for all of those years, or Skrull or whatever. Fake, I don't know. a Skrull supporter would be offended by that. But she's been an imposter for 3 years. So it's a... He's in for the long game. All of those elements you described are him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a few years later, then Hickman's work is what starts to inform the MCU now.
He seems to blow it up even bigger in terms of world building, but I could definitely see so much. Just the way that Jessica Drew talks so much, or whoever this is, if it's not real Jessica Drew, but it just also reminded me so much of the way that Jessica Jones speaks. And not only do they have the same first name, of course they're being written by the same person, but that sarcastic quality, that lightness of touch, I could definitely see connecting those two characters.
Well, and there's cinematic stuff when Maria Hill is confronting
who she thinks
is Jessica and telling her she doesn't trust her. And you keep cutting between Jessica and Maria is looking like more and more doubtful of her and says, you know, Fury doesn't work here anymore. I don't trust you anymore. So
you're right, though.
Yeah, a lot of it is cinematic. Right
out of a movie. And also just the way the cadence of their speaking, I could totally see Colby Smulders and maybe Robert Downey Jr. or someone having that kind of exchange in one of the movies as well. And we didn't talk about the art for our earlier issues because the art was very of its time.
It was definitely Bronze Age house style, without a doubt. Yes, yeah,
100%. I mean, basically, I don't know. Everything kind of had the similar look to it. But here, I really love the art here. I think it has the perfect combination of that cartoony, more comic booky look that I like, but definitely a little bit more adult, grown up take, just enough details without it being kind of overly detailed for me.
Yes, dear friend of the podcast, Elliot would tell you, yes, absolutely. He loves Jim Chung. So yeah, it's good. I agree. It's good. Especially in here, there's the incredible splash page when Jessica goes out, which is when she gets replaced, of her whole life. And there's just all the characters who've played a role in it, and High Evolutionary and Morgan Le Fay, and you have the Hydra agents and S.H.I.E.L.D., and you have all these
the Brothers Grimm,
Madame Web around her. Yes, Brothers Grimm, all of which plays out in her solo series. And it's really amazing stuff to get you a lot of information in a brief series of panels as she's being infiltrated. So yeah, I like Secret Invasion a lot. I'm glad we're building toward it in the MCU. I think that the stakes were really high in the comics. I mean, to have, again, people like her having been replaced over years of publication, even so it wasn't even retcon stuff. It was like, we actually saw Jessica Drew, who we thought was Jessica Drew, and then it turned out it wasn't. I think all of those things made it a really fun title with fun tie-ins like this. And it was a good reboot to Jessica, I'd say, after this. She's had a few solo titles since then, so I think it did bring her back. None have persisted for too long until the current one we're on, And yeah, I think it's really good stuff here. Do you think the What If inspired BMB?
No, I don't think so. No, definitely not. Again, I think it's because the What If really doesn't change the status quo very much. And while, yes, she kills Nick, her base character is not very different from what we see then in the 616. So I do not think it was an influence here.
Only thing I'd say, I don't know that I agree. I don't know that it was a direct influence, but there's not a lot of her story where she's not being trusted. And Bendis uses that element of her character, of the fact that she sort of has been a double agent already, or has been an agent mm-hmm. and a spy, to bring the mistrust in, to layer it on with the Skrull infiltration, yeah. but the Maria Hill and stuff. So I think, again, I don't think he was influenced by the What If, but quickly,
I think her origin.
Yeah. Those pieces of her origin though, which don't seem to exist far beyond the origin, right? Like beyond the origin, that's it. The revelation about Hydra happens and she becomes heroic. In the What If, the revelation doesn't happen as simply, and so she sort of stays villainous and in antagonism to S.H.I.E.L.D. And in this, she's in antagonism to S.H.I.E.L.D. at two levels. One, Maria doesn't trust her already, and two, we the audience know that she's not even who she says she is. So,
and I think some of that, now that I'm just thinking about it too, some of that might also be comic time versus real life time. Because in comic time, maybe it hasn't been that long since she worked for Hydra and she didn't know who she was. But of course, in real life, it's been many years, just like Captain America has been out of the ice, away from the 40s for a long, long time. But in comics world, it's not been maybe that long. But
yeah, 1977. But yeah. 1977 to 2008 in the sliding timescale is probably not more than 10 years.
Yeah, so there could be some more inherent distrust there. And we do know that from the Jessica issue that Brian does read the What Ifs. Certainly, he wrote a What If then, but I do think it's much more just her basic origin than it is the actual What If issue. Well, let's go to our returning new-ish segments of Would You Rather. Now it's time for our returning new-ish segment, Would You Rather, where each week we play a game of Would You Rather, placing ourselves in the Marvel Universe. And this week we have questions for each other. So Guido, do you want to ask me your question first?
No, you can start.
Okay, I'll go first. Well, then I was going to say, if you were a Skrull participating in Secret Invasion, which Avenger would you choose to...
That's not a Would You Rather.
Oh,
that's not a... That's not a Would You Rather. That's just a question.
I guess it's just a question. Well, that works.
Reconstruct it. Would I rather? And then give me options. So
okay,
go ahead.
Well, I'll stick with women then. Would you rather pretend to be Jessica Drew, Spider Woman, Black Widow, another spider related character? Just two.
It's just would you two? Rather?
Okay,
it's either two. Or.
Well, two then, because they have a lot of similarities down to spiders being untrustworthy.
Jessica Drew, because I'd rather have her hair.
She also has powers, and Natasha doesn't, so that's also a plus.
Okay, sure. I'll add that to my answer. Yes, but I'd rather be Jessica, which
okay.
not on purpose. My answer leads us to my question for you.
Oh, wonderful.
Would you rather have mousy blondish hair under a cowl or beautiful long black hair exposed
Oh, that's easy. It's definitely the beautiful long black hair because it's also got no, it's,
a isn't it a risk while you're superheroing? Like it her original outfit, while uglier, is probably more practical.
That is true, but part of superheroing is also striking the right image. You know, you want to intimidate the villains that you're fighting, the thugs. And I think that black hair, it's got that spider-like, web-like quality. So that's really going to intimidate the London thugs that you're chasing.
See, I love both of our answers were about Jessica's hair.
That's true.
good way to wrap up our discussion.
Yes. Well, as we go and comb our own luscious hair, thank you to your watchers for listening this week. And as always, the reading list is in the show notes.
You can follow us on Twitter. Please do follow us on Twitter. Interact with us. Tell us things. Respond to us at Dear Watchers. And until we learn telepathy, you can also shoot us an email, podcast@dearwatchers.com.
And please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back soon with another trip through the multiverse.
For part three of our three-part series, continuing our exciting October villain series.
Mm-hmm. And until then, in the words of Uatu, keep pondering the possibilities.